Welcome to Out of Bounds. I'm Tish Perlman. My guest is Elizabeth E. Root. Root is a retired licensed clinical social worker. For over 18 years, she served families and children in community mental health clinics in five counties in upstate New York. About 10 years ago, Root became concerned about the trend in our mental health system to label and medicate children with powerful drugs. The result of her concern is an important book called Kids Caught in the Psychiatric Maelstrom: How Pathological Labels and Therapeutic Drugs Hurt Children and Families. It was published last fall by Prager Books. And welcome to the show, Elizabeth. Thank you for joining me.
Thank you, Tish, and please feel free to call me Betsy.
Okay, I'll do that. Now, you were a teacher for a brief time before embarking on a career as a social worker. Tell us what prompted you to go into social work.
I didn't feel that I was meeting the kinds of needs that children had that I really wanted to address. In the classroom, I mean, I enjoyed teaching, especially upper elementary grades. But there was a break in my life at that time, and when I got through that, I just decided to go into social work. I thought I could be more useful there.
Well, you began your career in mental health in the late 80s, just about when the big transition to psychiatric drugs was about to explode. Now, did you feel that counseling and therapy were really effective at that point?
I felt that the therapy that I was doing in the late 80s, early 90s, especially the solution-focused, was wonderful. I was getting some really nice results with families.
And so talk therapy was your choice at that point.
Oh, yes, yes.
Well, so was there a particular case or a particular point in time when you started saying, my gosh, too many kids are being diagnosed with these labels, too many kids are being drugged? Tell us what happened.
It was in the early part of the century when more and more very young children were coming into my office. They had been to the psychiatrist and was sent to see me with a bipolar diagnosis. And I got real concerned because I just couldn't believe that 3-, 4-, 5-year-olds really had bipolar. This was a new phenomenon that mental health had not seen before. And it was all to do with the development of the antipsychotic drugs in the middle of the 90s. And a paper was published by an influential psychopharmacology group at Harvard claiming that about 20% of their ADHD kids had bipolar.
That's unbelievable to me, the way this transpired. And what was their criterion, though? I mean, were these kids that you were actually dealing with and working with, and suddenly they were coming to your office with these diagnoses?
Some of them were starting with me, and then the parent would insist on seeing the psychiatrist. And, of course, I didn't discourage them from doing that. It wasn't my place to do that. And then they would come back, and they would say, oh, the doctor said he's bipolar, and we're going to get medication. And it was almost like they were relieved to have a label and to have a solution. It seemed like a quick fix, but it didn't turn out to be that way.
Did you have diagnosed? I know you weren't probably diagnosing and giving labels to these kids, but what was your take on what was going on with these kids? Were they just rambunctious, rebellious?
Oh, yeah. Some of them were very angry. Some of them were very just unhappy and cried a lot. But most of them that had these behaviors, once I did a psychosocial history, I could trace back and identify something that had happened to them early in their lives that caused them to be that way. And it wasn't necessarily the fault of the parents. I mean, sometimes it was violence in the home, but not always. Sometimes the family had some sort of crisis. There was a sibling, perhaps, that died or was very ill. Something had happened that caused a child to become very upset, very angry, or very sad.
And in psychiatry at that point was trying to take care of it by just drugging it, and in some ways masking it.
Right. Psychiatry became biological in the 1990s, the decade of the brain. So named by Congress.
Oh, that's amazing to me. Now, your book quotes some mind-boggling statistics. For instance, between 1994 and 2003, there was a 40-fold increase in bipolar diagnosis in children and teens and even infants. Now, were you aware at the time that that was happening? I mean,
I certainly was aware that there was way too many of them coming through our clinic. And it was about, as you said, about 10 years ago, I decided to do my own research, and I started going to lots of conferences around the country. I started reading everything I get my hands on about the common diagnoses, the ADHD and the bipolar. And I learned a lot that it wasn't just in this immediate area. It was happening all over the country.
And what made you decide that you didn't think drugs were the answer?
Because once the children started on these drugs, I saw them getting sicker.
Tell us in what ways?
Often it would start with the attention deficit hyperactivity diagnosis, and they would get put on a stimulant. Well, the stimulant medications can cause manic behavior. It can cause temper tantrums. It can cause even hallucinations, psychosis. And when untoward symptoms like that started to appear, what seemed like it always happened was back to the psychiatrist, and the ADHD would be transmuted to bipolar. So then in addition to the stimulants and the clonidine or, you know, antihypertensive to settle them down at night, then they started getting the antipsychotics, the mood stabilizers like Depakote, highly toxic, not approved for children medication.
Yeah. Well, I don't see how any of these drugs could have ever even been tested on children. So what was the discussion in regard to that? Experimenting with kids, indeed. Is that what it ends up really being?
It's like our generation of children are guinea pigs for these medications, really. And, you know, some of the doctors that are even pro-medicine are beginning to realize that. Uh-huh. If you heard the news on February 10th, the new DSM, Diagnostic and Statistical Manual.
I was going to bring that up, yeah.
Oh, okay.
I want to ask you this. Do you ever advocate for drugs for any of your clients, or are you totally opposed?
A long time ago when I was very early in my career, I thought, well, all you have to do, you got an ADHD child, you give them medicine. I know the answer. That's what I thought. That was before it was burgeoning into, you know, the bipolar thing. But about the turn of the century, I began to get wise and realize that these kids, usually with disciplines, consistent discipline, with maybe the parents getting a little guidance, children can learn to control. In most cases, they can learn to control this behavior.
Mm-hmm. Well, it's certainly, you know, in the many thousands of years of people raising kids, that they have been able to find ways in the past. So I would assume that hasn't changed. And then using drugs as a crutch.
Right. They used to just say, well, the kid's extra energetic. And it was a long story as to changing patterns in the family, you know, changing parental styles. There are perhaps more kids that are misbehaving these days, but there's lots of good reasons for that.
Yeah, yeah. Now talk to us about Dr. Joseph Biederman. I think I'm saying his
Biederman.
His, Biederman. Mm-hmm. He was a world-renowned child psychiatrist, expert on bipolar, and also a huge advocate for drugging kids. And he was instrumental in some of this increase in diagnosis and medication. Tell us about this.
He heads the pediatric psychopharmacology department that I mentioned earlier at Harvard. They're the ones that published the paper in 1996 claiming that children were now getting diagnosed with pediatric bipolar. And what they did was they stretched the criteria that already exist for adult form, and they just decided that with children, the cycling happens very rapid. Maybe, you know, during a day, it can happen 5, 6, 7, 8, 9, 10 times, which, of course, happens with little kids.
That seems to me that's the avenue of childhood, to be changeable and energetic and crazy.
And that was something that I was really disturbed about, because I couldn't see these children fitting the criteria that were in the DSM, and there was no pediatric bipolar, and there still isn't in the DSM.
Yeah, yeah. Well, you say in your book that we later learned that this Dr. Joseph Biederman was making literally thousands of dollars as a consultant to the drug companies.
That was real after 2007, when I was no longer practicing. Senator Grassley, the Senate Finance Committee, who oversees Medicare and Medicaid, is doing a lot of investigating now between the psychiatric profession and the drug industry. And that group was one of the first ones. They discovered that Biederman and one of his colleagues only reported, you know, some thousands of dollars that they had received from Johnson & Johnson, the makers of Risperdal. Well, it turns out they had actually made about $1.6 million each over a period of a few years. And this was the drug that they were recommending for the bipolar. So it was a huge conflict of interest, and it really threw their research into jeopardy. You know, it really compromised the claims they were making.
Oh, I can imagine that it would. I can't imagine that they never thought this would come out, but obviously they didn't. Now there's a fact that most people probably don't even know, and there really is no way to diagnose mental disorders. I mean, there's no test, like an MRI.
Oh, absolutely. There is no proven biological basis for any mental disorder, not schizophrenia, bipolar, any of the adult so-called, I don't even use those words anymore.
Yeah.
Now that I don't have to get a third-party reimbursement, I don't have to make diagnoses or use words like, I don't even like mental illness. It carries tremendous amount of stigma.
Yeah, yeah. But I think a lot of people think that they can be diagnosed with these things, literally, and the drug will fit the diagnosis and so on. But these diagnoses are really kind of a guessing game in regard to behaviors
and
reports from third parties about the way people are behaving and the
especially
way children are behaving. Yeah. Mm-hmm. That's remarkable to me. That lives can be totally destroyed by third party, you know, gossip.
Yeah.
In some ways.
And the parents of these children, I discovered, weren't getting enough information to make wise choices for their children. And so that I saw that as my role when I was still working in the clinics. I was giving parents, I felt I had to. I mean, it was my ethical duty to provide the information that they really needed to make a wise choice. And many of them were very surprised to learn that there was no biological basis and that the doctor didn't have any test for ADHD.
Mm-hmm.
So many would come in and say, I want my kid tested for ADHD.
Yeah.
And I would say, there's no test. The doctor's going to do the same thing that you and I would do, is just watch the child.
Uh-huh. And have the parent report some of the behaviors that were disturbing them.
Uh-huh. And the teachers. And often it came from the school.
Well, let's talk about what we began a conversation about, that the mental health professionals use a manual mm-hmm. called the Diagnostic and Statistical Manual of Mental Disorders.
Mm-hmm.
First edition came out in 1952. It listed 106 disorders. Now there are over 400 now, mm-hmm. correct?
Yes.
So tell us about this book and why it has so much power.
The way they compose this book is every 10 years or so, a new edition comes out. The fifth edition is due out in 2013, and they're working on that now. The last one was 1994, the DSM-4, and then there was a revised edition a few years later. There are panels of psychiatrists to fit each category, the anxiety disorders, the depressive disorders, the children's disorders, and they decide what new diagnoses they're going to put in each time it comes out. And it's been discovered that most of these doctors have ties with pharmaceutical companies, and they're highly influenced by their connections with those.
And is there anybody who can oversee that and say, wait a minute, this is not exactly working the way we hoped it would?
Lots of people are saying that, but there's no official body that has any power to change so far. I mean, we're hoping. I went to a conference in Anaheim, California, early in December last year, and it was a wonderful, wonderful conference, 7,000 people from all over the world. Bessel van der Kolk is probably close to the world's expert on trauma. I've been following him since the 80s. He talked about different ways of treating post-traumatic stress disorder without drugs. He's not a drug person.
Mm-hmm.
Well, afterwards, I went up and I told him what I had seen with children getting the bipolar and getting their brains infused with these toxic chemicals, and he agreed that this was a horrible thing that was happening, especially since it's very hard to undo the damage that's done by these drugs. And then he told me that his group, traumagroup.org, wanted to put in a new diagnosis called developmental trauma disorder to take place of the bipolar, to supplant bipolar.
Mm.
And this would not be treated with drugs. And because so many children who come through with these symptoms, it's because of some trauma they've had in their early life.
If you're just joining us, my guest is Elizabeth E. Root. We're talking about her book, Kids Caught in the Psychiatric Maelstrom, How Pathological Labels and Therapeutic Drugs Hurt Children and Families. Do you want to continue this conversation about somebody who's trying to change this pattern of drugging and labeling?
I wanted to add that because Bessel van der Kolk doesn't have ties with the pharmaceutical industry. I just read an article in Psychotherapy Networker, and I wondered what happened to that, and that article answered my question. His group did put forth this diagnosis, and they were given all kinds of diabolical reasons why that wasn't going to happen. I mean, they said, well, there hasn't been any research on this diagnosis. And well, of course there hasn't been, because you can't do research. You can't get money for research on a diagnosis that doesn't exist yet.
Yeah.
So that would have been true on any. But they gave him a lot of reasons, and I really, and this is my opinion, it's because he's not a drug person that he just doesn't carry the influence.
Yeah, well, that makes sense.
Which is really tragic.
That does make sense, that so many drug companies are giving the funding for some of these studies,
mm-hmm.
hoping for a certain result,
well,
I assume.
True.
Now, the questions that we all need to ask, and are parents asking this? Have you had parents ask you, what are all these toxic chemicals doing to these undeveloped brains of these children? I mean, we worry about lead and stuff in the soil and in the food. Why are we drugging children like this?
Well, because parents have been misled to think that that's the magic cure, that's the quick fix. They don't understand that the children's brains are actually being altered, being damaged. When you start messing around with the serotonergic and the dopaminergic systems, you know, and the neuronal systems of the brain, they're upsetting the balance. And this is one of the things I really learned a lot about in California in December. Neuroplasticity. Our brains have a remarkable ability to adapt, to experience,
And even to trauma.
Well, absolutely. Mm-hmm. Trauma experiences or good experiences. Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. Or when we're very relaxed, say we're meditating, then the brain changes. When we're listening to music, or when we're upset, when we're sad. Of course, there's all these changes in the brain. Mm-hmm. The brain has a remarkable ability to come back to the optimal, where you want it to be when you're feeling good, without the use of... But if you put drugs, it perturbs that system, throws it off. Now, the psychiatrists have been claiming that mental illness, so-called, is caused by imbalances in the chemistry of the brain. That's not true. It's the drugs that cause the imbalance. Once you introduce drugs, yeah, then you do have an imbalance. And then if you keep adding more drugs to counteract the side effects, the brain can be irrevocably damaged.
Well, I would certainly mainly be concerned about the undeveloped brains of children. Well, I mean, your book talks about how they're diagnosing and putting infants on some of these antipsychotics.
And now they're trying to introduce a potential, there's another diagnosis that's like potential psychosis risk syndrome, which means...
Oh, my goodness.
And there are doctors, I read this, I think it's even in my book, that are saying that if you can catch it early enough, even in the cradle, by interviewing a parent, and if there's bipolar in the family, you interview the mother, if father, who was ever present, and if there's a suspicion this child might develop bipolar, inoculate them with his antipsychotics to prevent it from happening. And then we're afraid that if this psychosis risk syndrome goes into the DSM, that we'll see this happening with children.
Like you mentioned in your book, one of the people that you quoted was talking about mental straitjackets that we're putting mm-hmm. children into, and that's exactly what this sounds like.
Mm-hmm.
It's amazing to me. Now, can you give us any examples of children that you were treating who then went on to be drugged and how they changed? Did they lose their personalities? Tell us a little bit about that.
It broke my heart. Well, I mentioned one boy in my book, cute kid, had lots of spunk. He would come in and he drew lots of animated pictures, and his parents felt that he was uncontrollable. It was a struggling family. They were poor. They had quite a few children, and they struggled. And he was diagnosed ADHD. He started on drugs, and he stayed on different drugs, and then eventually it was transmuted to the bipolar, getting on the cocktail, take a few away, add a few. He started when he was about 5, and by the age of 9, when he come into my office, he just sat on the bench. He just sat there and wouldn't talk, and if I asked him a question, it would be shrugging his shoulders. And his tongue would protrude in repose, almost like a tardy dyskinesia thing, which can happen with these antipsychotic drugs. I got horribly concerned, and I was so sad for this boy, but I saw it repeatedly with children that came to my office.
I can't believe parents aren't noticing.
It dampened their spontaneity, their creativity. And,
it's stealing their personality.
It happens more. Now, these children that are called difficult are often the most creative and intelligent, promising kids. But they're the ones that'll argue, that'll want to know, ask a lot of questions, mm-hmm. that maybe can't sit still because there's so much going on in their brains. I mean, Einstein was notably hyperactive.
Oh, a lot of people I know have been.
Yeah, and people who have high energy, even, like they're so-called manic. Those are our artists and our writers and mm-hmm. productive people. So what are we doing today? Are we going to lose all of our genius because they're going to get drugged as children?
Yeah, and made passive and personalityless. Is there a concern, too, especially with teenagers? I hear more about teenagers being diagnosed and drugged, selling these medications to the fellow students and so on. What's going on with that aspect?
So many, mostly boys, young men, I should say, once they hear what I've done with, my writing and my work, have told me that they took Ritalin when they were in school, in elementary school, and into maybe junior high, even high school, and they got kind of stuck on it, and they started passing it out to their friends. And some of them really got into heavy-duty drug selling.
Oh, my goodness.
Oh, that's a big, big problem in junior, senior high schools, is kids being on these psychotropic drugs without prescriptions.
I believe it.
Especially the stimulants.
And it probably has the same effect on kids whether they have bipolar or not.
Oh, yeah. Anybody taking a stimulant is going to be over-focused. And it's the same effect on anybody with a diagnosis or not.
Mm-hmm.
And some people think they can perform better on it. Some grown-ups think that.
Yeah.
It jeopardizes some of the higher levels of functioning of the brain, like the reasoning, the creative thinking, the ability to figure out problems, problem-solving skills. Those kinds of things are lost. And there's research that shows that in the long term, the kids that are on medication are worse off by the time they reach age 15 or so.
Yeah. Well, I wonder about the long-term effects of all these drugs on adults and children. I mean, these drugs have really not been around that long for us to know. Sometimes the effects can happen 20, 30 years on some of the older drugs that we know about.
Some of the grown-ups, the adults, that have been on the so-called atypical antipsychotics, which were supposed to be better than the first order, the Thorazine, the Haldol, those, the SSRIs, selective serotonin reuptake inhibitors, were supposed to be an improvement over these. Well, those are the antidepressants, which is another story. But the antipsychotics, Risperdal, Zyprexa, Judan, Seroquel, some adults now have been on those long enough since the early 80s that they're now dying early. They're dying. It's turning out that this was true of the first order antipsychotics as well, that their lifespans are measurably shorter.
And they are attributing that to the drugs?
Oh, yeah. Well, it seems to be a direct correlation.
Wow.
I guess, you know, I don't know how scientifically it's been, but it's certainly noticed that adults that become chronically ill, and they do become chronically ill on the drugs. It's not the mental illness, it's the drugs that makes them chronically ill.
I can imagine.
And it does shorten their lifespan.
Oh, there have to be side effects. I mean, we even hear about side effects. At least people are being honest about some of that. Now, I wonder about this. There seem to be so many children on some of these medications, antidepressant, antipsychotic, and then you hear about this upsurgence of obesity in children. Do you think there's a correlation? I mean, I know that these drugs can cause obesity, correct?
Oh, absolutely.
And weight gain.
Oh, and virtually every child that goes on the antipsychotics gains dramatically. You know, just today, somebody that I talked to told me about, I think it was a niece of hers that's now 16 and was diagnosed bipolar at the age of 7 or something like that, and had been on these cocktails all these years and now wanted to get off at the age of 16. Mm. And I told her about Peter Bregan here in Ithaca that can do this. He knows how to safely withdraw people from the psychotropic drugs. And then I recommended him, and she told me that was some time ago. Today, when I talked to her, she thanked me profusely because they did go to him, and in 6 months, he had her off of all those drugs. She lost 25 pounds. She feels like, according to my friend, it's like a new world to her. And here she is in the middle of her teens, and she's alive now. She's lost this weight, and she's just supremely happy to be rid of all those effects.
Oh, that's amazing. Well, what brave people to even attempt that. It seems to me most people will just go along and not try to withdraw from
Thank
a drug.
Goodness she did it before it was too late.
Yeah, yeah. Now, there does seem to be some kind of a higher rate of children in distress and so on. Mm-hmm. Do you think that's true, or are we just paying attention in different ways?
I think it's true, and I don't think it's surprising. If you look at the changes that have occurred in the family in the last 2 or 3 decades and compare the kind of lives that people my age had growing up. At least, you know, one parent was usually home, and we had all kinds of free time at home to run outside and play. And we had imaginative play. Many of us didn't have television. We certainly didn't have all these things that go in our ears and, you know, all these technology. This technology. We were outside playing, and kids don't have that luxury today. Most of them are regimented from the time they get out of bed in the morning until 6 o'clock or so at night, when everybody comes home tired and this frenetic life all day long. Maybe they're going from school to after school to sports or whatever, lessons. Both parents, if they're both in the home, are probably tired and want to get a quick meal. And there's also been recent research that shows that many, many families don't sit down to have a meal together anymore at dinner time.
Yeah.
Either they're all on the run, or maybe they're hooked up to technology, watching television while they eat. Then there's homework. Kids have so much more homework these days. What time do they have left to run around outdoors and scream and yell the way kids need to.
Oh, I know. I would miss it so, especially the nature deficit that I notice in kids.
Yeah.
I used to love to lay on the grass and look at the clouds. And I was brought up in Southern California, run down to the beach and just watch the sunset. It's just amazing. And now kids, it seems to me, from the age of about 2, they're already being regimented for college, you know?
Well, that's another thing. They're started way, way too young on academics, which, I mean, scholars and developmentalists know that's not right.
Yeah, yeah. So what do you tell parents via your book? I mean, their kids are being diagnosed, their doctors are telling them to go on drugs. What are you telling people, to go back into old-fashioned therapy?
Well, first of all, if a parent came and said that they'd been diagnosed with either one of those ADHD, bipolar, I would say, well, why don't you ask the doctor for a test? Prove to me that my child has a neurological disorder. Show me the electroencephalogram, the EEG. Show me some kind of blood test or something that can tell me for sure that there's a sickness in my child's brain. And there's not a doctor in the world that can produce such a test. So that's one thing. Then, as far as the remedy goes, several things. It depends on the history that you see in the child, but sometimes changing a diet makes a big difference. The stuff kids eat these days is just really toxic. Mm-hmm. I mean, mm-hmm. all the additives, food dyes, preservatives, there have been experiments that prove these things cause hyperactivity and agitation in kids. And so they might try a nutritionist to help them sort out which foods might be causing this behavior. Another thing is to guide the parents into a system of interaction and discipline that works for the children. Parenting's hard. And any of us that have these children who are so challenging and bright and creative sometimes can use some guidance to find the right system that works. Whether you're authoritative or permissive, find what works for you and find somebody who can help you to find a model that fits that, and then be very consistent and stick with it until it becomes automatic. And that's not easy. It's not easy to be consistent.
Oh, yeah.
But that's what it takes.
And therapy takes time.
Yeah.
You know, I mean, the best of therapy was to help people gain their own insights into their lives and how they're feeling. Mm-hmm. And people want quick fixes.
And I think that there's a lot of parents who feel guilty because they don't have the quality time with their children anymore, and they make up for it by spoiling, you know, maybe not using as much discipline as they should. I think there's a lot of kids who are overindulged in, you know, with the brand name clothing and the computer games, things that many families can't afford, but they still buy them. You know, if they could put that money somewhere else into better foods, organic foods instead of these luxuries, I think there'd be a big difference.
Yeah. Well, Betsy, we only have about a minute left. What are you planning for the future? Are you going to write any more books? Are you going to continue your crusade against drugs?
Well, I'm certainly continuing my crusade, and I'm continuing my research, and I'm excited about some of the promising practices that I'm learning about as we speak.
Well, Elizabeth E. Root, thank you so much for joining us, and I do recommend the book. It's called Kids Caught in the Psychiatric Maelstrom: How Pathological Labels and Therapeutic Drugs Hurt Children and Families. Thank you so much for joining us.
Thank you so much. It was my pleasure.
Our audio producer is Nate Richardson at Rep Studio in Ithaca, New York. If you'd like to make a tax-deductible donation in support of the Out of Bounds radio show, please contact our fiscal sponsor, the Arts of the Southern Finger Lakes, at earts.org. That's earts.org. Our theme music was composed by Diego Vega. And visit us online at outofboundsradioshow.com. We'll be back next week. I'm Tish Perlman.